Now we're holding on Ayin Amud Aleph, 14 lines from the top, about a third of the way down the page. Mishmar has been discussing various dinim about, we learned in the Mishnah about how the Omer is matir, the new year's, the new crop of this year, Chodosh, to be eaten, and the Shtei Lechem allows it to be brought as Korbanos. And so Mishmar have been dealing with different questions about the growth cycle of the plants and how that, and whether, and then how that, and how that interfaces with those times. We talked about, for example, grain was planted between Pesach and Shavuos, so that it took root and flowered before Shavuos, but after last year's Omer, does it become mutter with next year's Omer, or we have to wait till the next year's Shtei Lechem, and various other related points like that, including the Gemara had eventually gotten into questions about Truma and Meiser as well. So, the, continuing in that vein, the Gemara says, Boyer Rabohu. So Rabohu has a question. Shibolus Shemerka Bakri. Suppose you have a complete stalk of grain, that then you get miruach of it in the pile. Namely like this. The usual procedure is you harvest the grain, then you do all the various processes to get, to you thresh it and winnow it and so on and so forth, and eventually you get a pile of clean grain, and then you put it, you stack it up, you make a heap of it, and you smooth out the sides, and that's miruach, and at that point it becomes chayev and meiser. In this case, you have a complete, stalk of grain, which you missed threshing it, and it wound up stuck in someplace inside the pile. The shosla, then he planted it, then when he's going through the pile, he eventually found it and planted it, the korah le'ashem, the mechuber, and he called it truma, and he declared it truma and ma'aser, when it's attached to the ground, mahu, what's the din, would that designation of truma and ma'aser be effective? On the one hand, given the mercha tavlala, you could argue that once you did miruach, it becomes tavl, because that's the usual rule that grain becomes tavl and is now chayiv and truma and meiser once you do miruach. So therefore, tikora aler shen kodshala. So when he gives it a name of truma or of meiser, then it is able to be effective, just like with any other tavl. But maybe not. Kivin de shosla, once he planted it, pokalotivlamina, maybe the designation of tevel goes away, once he planted it. In other words, Shitamu Kabetis points out, you know, yeah, if to begin with, if he had never done miruach with it, and he wanted to designate it as truma and meiser while it's attached to the ground, of course that wouldn't work. But here, where he already did that, where he already did miruach, maybe it would work. And he also goes on to say that it's no longer tevel and it'll be mutter to eat. The question is that so the issue of tevel won't go away. The question is whether maybe the fact that it's tevel goes away to the extent that now you can't designate it as truma and meiser anymore. Okay, so that was the question Rav Abahu asks. Amrulei Rabbanan la'Abaye, so the other Chachamim said to Abaya, to in discussion of this question of Rav Abahu, if you're going to tell me that it's possible to declare it as Truma and Meiser, imken matzinu Truma b'mechobol akarka, then it would be possible to find a case where Truma can be designated in something that's attached to the ground. Or Tanan, yet we learn in a Mishnah, lo matzinu Truma. We never find truma attached to the ground. So then, if this was a scenario where you would, then that rule wouldn't be correct. Now there is in fact no such mishnah. In fact, the Sefer Shas says on it, you know, the Koitzu Daiti says, I apparently don't know enough. I don't know where this mishnah, or even a braisa is. So there are various. There are various possibilities that Meforshim bring that first of all, it could indeed be a Braisa. Sometimes the Gemara does use the word Tnan on a Braisa, so therefore it could just be a Braisa, which is otherwise unrecorded. But there are a couple of Achronim give various possibilities of how the Gemara is extracting this from a Braisa someplace in Sifri or in other places. And very often the Gemara will do that rather than quoting a Mishnah or a Braisa word for word. Many times it'll just extract from it the main point. So then this could be something like that. In any case, the point is, the rule is that truma and meiser can never be from something that's attached to the ground. But if you say that in this case it could be, then you do have such a scenario. Omalei, so Abaye answers to him or to them, or whoever it is that asked the question, Kitanyahi le'inichyuvim misa v'choymash. That braiser or mishnah or whatever it is talking about as far as that a person can never be chayev misa b'dei shemayim if he's a zor and eats the terum of a mezid, or that he should have to pay keren v'chomesh to a koyin if he eats it b'shogeg, that wouldn't apply. Such things apply only when it's detached from the ground. Namely, the itolish v'ochel, because what happens if it was designated as truma when it was attached to the ground and now he detaches it and eats it, tolush, then in her tolushu, well, then it's detached, and now at that point he'd be chayav of the regular penalties of the shogeg u'mezid, as the case may be, for eating truma. The igochin v'ochel, if on the other hand he bent down to the ground and ate it while it's still attached to the ground, then we would say that's not mechayev him, but the baita, it's a kolodim, then his das is bottled to everybody else because most people don't eat that way. So in other words, the Braisa, this Braisa, or paraphrase Braisa, or whatever it is exactly, is saying that you can never have that you can never have that a person should be high of the penalties for eating truma, misa b'dei shemayim, or having to pay keren v'chomesh when the truma is attached to the ground. But not to say that it can't actually be truma, it could be, and therefore there's still room for Rabbi Bahu's question that we could say that maybe in fact, since it underwent miruach, then it became tevel, and therefore now it can be designated truma just like any other tevel could. So the Gemara says, "Maishna midiksiva pinkosa de ilfa." Then why is this different? So we're telling me that if a person eats truma while it's still attached to the ground, then we ignore that and we don't consider it eating truma. We call it botla daita ezapolatim, which, by the way, would mean, in other words, so again, as far as eating, we would say so we don't consider it eating. Now in partisa, then we won't be chayiv misa b'dei shemayim because that requires eating. As far as the keren v'chomesh, the rule will be since it's not considered eating, instead what it will be considered is there is mazik the truma. Now, you do have, if a person damages truma or otherwise wounds it or whatever, he does have to pay the koyin, but not, he doesn't pay a choymesh, he doesn't have the special dinim of paying back the koyin for eating such truma, because the din, the special din that he has to pay a keren v'chomesh applies only when he eats. The Gemara explains elsewhere, when the pasuk says, ki yoichal kodesh, when he eats truma, prat the mazik, that comes to exclude a case where a person is just mazik truma, where he just pays as a regular mazik rather than the special dinim of eating. Anyway, so the Gemara says, "Why should I be ksiva pinkosa de ilfa?" So why would it be different, this case of eating truma while it's attached to the ground? Why would it be different than a case that was written in the notebook of Ilfa? Now, Ilfa was an early Amora. He was a Talmud of Rebbe. In his times, such things were not allowed to be written down yet. But that's the Urnal in general. The Chachamim, until Torah Shavuot was able more generally to be written, the Chachamim couldn't write books that you'd learn from, that everybody would be learning from, but they could write private notes for themselves of dinim that they had learned and they didn't want to forget. That was allowed. So sometimes those notebooks would turn up and the Chachamim would be able to read them, but they were never meant for publication, for dissemination in the first place. Anyway, Ilfa wrote down a note. Beitzei nivlasa oifa tahor, eggs of a dead kosher bird. Now, as we learned in Zvachim, and we'll learn more in Cholim, that a dead kosher bird that didn't undergo proper shechita is metamei a person when he swallows it. So now, what happens as far as the eggs of them? Miktsasim b'chutz, miktsasim b'fnim. Suppose now that you have this carcass of this kosher bird, and there are some eggs in it that it started laying, but it didn't finish yet. So part of the egg is inside, it is still inside the chicken, and part of it is outside. So now, mibifnim, if a person now were to eat from, if a person were now to eat from these eggs, from the part that's inside, meaning, in other words, it actually explains, he sticks his mouth into the cavity of the chicken and eats the part of the egg that's still inside, so then, then that part of the egg which is still inside is considered part of the actual body of the chicken, and therefore the same way as if he eats the actual the chicken or whatever kind of bird we're talking about, so the same way as if he were to eat from the flesh of the actual bird, he would become tamei when he eats a kibetza of it. And it makes him tamei while it's inside his throat. So therefore, so he and his clothes become tamei, meaning in other words, he becomes an abatuma and his clothes become a rishon l'tuma, as is the usual rule. But if he ate from the eggs that are outside, if he ate from the part of the egg that's outside the bird, in the time regarding my base of then he does not become tomei, because then he's not eating the nivas ha'efsher, then he's just eating eggs. So we see, in other words, that people don't normally eat by sticking their mouth inside the bird and eating the eggs from the inside, and nevertheless we still consider it eating, and it still has the implications as far as eating, as far as him becoming tomei. So you see that just because a person eats something in an unnatural way is not a reason to not consider it eating. This is all according to Rashi. Tosfos though says that this is Tosfos called this halacha b'leitam. It's a halacha without a reason. So what? Just because he sticks his mouth in, therefore the egg should be considered part of the flesh. The fact is, it's an egg. It's not part of the flesh. So they have a whole different explanation. What it means is, in other words, the egg itself, the part of the egg that was inside the bird's body when the bird died, is considered to be part of the flesh of it. So now, even if he takes it out and eats it, he'll still be tomei, just as if he ate from the flesh of the bird itself. The part that was outside when the bird died, that will be considered like an egg and not matame. And then Tosfos goes on to say that this would only be when the egg itself was not completely formed inside the bird's body. because if the egg was actually completed, then the Tosfos refers to a Gemara in Beitza that says that actually he would be tahor, because that's talking about where the eggs were completely formed. And Tosfos then goes on to say, well, wait, the whole purpose of the Gemara over here is to talk about what happens if he eats it in an unnatural way. If he takes out the egg completely from the egg, fine, it's not completely formed, let's say, but why would that be considered bafla daiteosefalodim? Why would there be a difference between the part that was inside and the part that was outside? And Tosfos says, because the fact is, once you take it out of the bird, you can't really tell what part was inside and what part was outside. So it's true, even if he does eat it while it's inside the bird, he will in fact still be tomei. And the Braisa is the same, regardless, when he eats that part that was inside, whether in fact he sticks his head inside and eats it, as Rashi says, or whether he pulls the whole thing out of the bird and then eats it, as Tosfos is learning, either way, the part that was inside will be metamehim. So we see, in other words, that even eating in an unnatural way, even if he were to stick his head in, like his mouth in, like Rashi says, he would still become tummy. Then Tosfos also brings from a manuscript of Rabbeinu Gershon. This is Rabbeinu Gershon Moragola. Now we have a Pirush of Rabbeinu Gershon on our Masechta over here, which is printed on the side, but this is not in his Pirush, so this is just in a different manuscript of Gemara that he had written, where he has a different Gersa that it's not about the eggs. Tosfos says this Gersa of Rabbeinu Gershon is that it's actually talking about the intestines of the bird. So, in other words, the idea is, Tosfos says, that Rabbeinu Tam explains, before a bird dies, it's usually sick for a while. One thing that may happen during that time is its intestines may stick out of its body. So now, then, the question is, so now if a person eats from the intestines that were inside when the bird died versus that were outside, if he eats from what was inside, it'll be tomei, it'll count towards the amount that makes him tomei, whereas if he eats from what was outside, was not. Even though, in general, the kishkas are something pretty disgusting to eat, we still wouldn't say bot v'dayte etzofaladim. In fact, the Rambam also understands the question to be as far as the intestines, but the Rambam explains that the case is where some of the intestines are inside his throat and some of them are sticking out of his mouth, what combines and what doesn't. The Ravid disagrees and then says, you have several different explanations of Rishon and what's going on over here in our Sylvia. In any case, the point is that however we explain the scenario over here, the point is it's not a normal way of eating, and yet we're saying it is considered eating, and he does in fact become tummy by doing that. So what are you telling me, that just because a person bends over and eats from a stalk of grain that's attached to the ground is a reason not to consider him, is a reason not to consider that eating, and to say that he wouldn't be high of the regular penalties for eating truma? And the Gemara answers, Tolu shavidi inchi da'achli vachli. Because when it comes to things that are detached from the ground, People will people sometimes will normally eat that. Here you're talking about a bird and its eggs, or a bird, its intestines, or whatever. They were never attached to the ground in the first place. So yes, it's an unusual thing to do, but not so unusual that we would say Bapa Daita. A person might well do that, that he really wants to eat that egg or those kishkis or whatever, and he will do that and is considered eating. But Mechobel, like Avidi Inshidathli, whereas when something is attached to the ground, people don't normally eat it that way. When it's attached to the ground, if anything, they normally pick it first and then eat it, and once they picked, we said that that's the din doesn't apply. So if a person instead chooses to leave it attached to the ground and eat it that way, then in fact we will not consider that eating, and we will say bapa daita etza kolodon. Whereas when it comes to the bird, we might well in fact say that since to begin with it was never attached to the ground, yes, a person might eat it from where it was, from where it's still attached to the bird. The person wouldn't find that to be so problematic. So therefore, so we're left with the din. So we are in fact left with the din that when it's attached to the, we have Rabbi Bo's question remains open, whether that stalk of grain that went through miruach still as a stalk rather than as detached grain as usual, whether it's able to be declared as truma or not. So the question is still left open. As far as this case, by the way, where the person is, where we're saying that if he ate from it while it was attached to the ground, now an interesting point is, at some point, of course, he has to detach it because he has to swallow it. So in fact, the Merkevas HaMishnah on the Rambam points out that it would have to be that we're talking about that he swallowed it and it went into his throat while it's still attached, and then it gets detached only after that. Otherwise, it still would be tolush. On the other hand, there are achronim who talk about that. No, once he puts it into his mouth, when it's attached, then we don't care if by the time he swallows it, it is in fact detached. Okay. The Gemara continues. The Gemara had mentioned before about flower pots that have or don't have holes in them as far as the dinim of truma and ma'aser. So now the Gemara mentions another point in this connection. If a person plants kilayim in a flower pot without a hole, also then he's also to do such a thing with the rabbanim. Rabbi says that seems like a very odd way to phrase it. If he had told us the chiddush that when a person does that, it's not also min haTorah maybe, but because when it's growing in a flower pot without a hole, it's completely detached from the ground, and therefore the issur wouldn't apply min haTorah. But if he told us it's also, not only it's also, but he actually gets makas maudus, get a bun on shaker, then fine, it would be good. Then Rav Tov Yumi is telling us a chiddush. Ella Osir, but when he just says Osir, my Kamash Malan says Abai, what's the chiddush of that? The Midrabanan have Yizriya, just that Midrabanan such a thing is considered planting, and therefore it's also to do that. Tanena, we learn that already in a Mishnah. Tonam me oxit shein nokov al hanokov. If a person had two batches of the same kind of fruit, one of which grew in a flower pot without a hole, and the other one in a flower pot with a hole, and now he takes what grew in the one without the hole, and he designates it truma on behalf of the one that does have the hole. Now, the one that has the hole is considered attached to the ground because, again, like in the previous Gemara, the plant is able to get nourishment from the ground through the hole. Even if it's not directly on the ground, but it's still the vapors from the ground or whatever it is are able to get in through the hole, and therefore it's able to grow that way, as opposed to the one without the. But so therefore that one is considered as if it was attached to the ground, and therefore it's chayiv in truma and ma'aser d'oraisa, as opposed to the one without the hole is considered that it's not chayiv d'oraisa, only d'rabbanan. So now if you took truma from the one without the hole, which is chayiv only d'rabbanan, on behalf of the one that does have the hole, which is chayiv d'oraisa, truma, it is valid. But he still has to take truma again from the one that doesn't have that has the hole, or from what grew in the ground, in order to have proper truma. So we see the very fact that the Chachamim consider the first batch to be truma demonstrates that means that such a thing is considered planting the drabanan. So therefore, so you see that even planting in a flower pot without a hole is considered planting drabanan. And therefore, Abaya wonders why did Rav Tov Yumi Bar Kisna, in the name of Shmuel, phrase it the way he did, just that it's also rather than saying Makanois and Makas Maurus, which would have been the greater Chiddush. So in fact, the Rambam does end up passing that he does get Makas Maurus, that, so in other words, Abaya is understanding that is what Shmuel meant. So fine, he phrased it a little awkwardly. He just said also, rather than saying what the penalty is, but in fact, that would be what it means that, that would be what it means that, there is Makas Maurus. So Rabbeinu Gershom, in fact, over here says as much as well. Rabbeinu Gershom says that that Abaya is saying, well, why did he say also? It must be to tell us that he gets Malchus de Rabban and Makas Maurus. Okay. Getting back to the actual dinim of Chodosh now, the Mishnah says, Hachitin v'asa'odin v'akusmin v'ashibolos shuva v'ashifrein. These five kinds of grains, we're going to define them, and then we're going to define them in the Gemara. Harei v'chayovin v'chala. All of these things, so now we're going to mention them in this connection, in connection with Chodosh, but there's a number of dinim in which they share commonalities. They're all chayiv and chala. If you make a dough out of any one of these five species, then it's chayiv and chala, minatora. And they combine with one another, as we'll see in the Gemara, in what cases they combine. We're going to see where sometimes any one of them can combine with any other, and sometimes we say that only certain ones combine with certain ones. We're going to discuss that in the Gemara. When he first brings this halacha and Hilchos Brachos, he explains that bread made from these five things is just called pas, plain, is called pas, bread, without any qualifier, as opposed to, for example, we're going to talk in the Gemara about rice and millet and various other kinds of things like that, where even if you make bread out of them, it has a shem levi, it has a secondary name. People call it rice bread or corn bread or whatever. Anyway, so all of these are chayiv and chala. And with Stif and Zamzam, they will combine with one another, depending on the circumstances, as we'll see in the Gemara. Vasurin b'chodosh melifnei Pesach. All of them, you're not allowed to eat them as chodosh before Pesach. U'melichtzim melifnei Omer, and you're not allowed to harvest them before the, and you're not allowed to, when we say the Pesach, of course we have to mean the day of Pesach on which the Omer is brought, which we've learned before is the 16th of Nisan, and then we said in Chutz La'aretz you have to wait until after the 17th as well, when there's no Beis HaMikdash. And you're not allowed to harvest them before the Omer, because we learned a couple of Mishnayos ago that in Yerushalayim they would be selling right after the Omer was brought, they would be selling various grain products, and we said Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda disagree on whether the Chacham approved of that or not, but we said everybody agrees you're really not supposed to harvest before the Omer, at least from certain places. We're going to talk about in the next Mishnah there may be places where you are allowed to, but from places where you could conceivably bring the Omer, you're not supposed to harvest before the Omer, because the Omer should be the first harvesting. The only machlokas over there we said was whether we're afraid that a person is going to eat from it while he's harvesting it or not. Anyway, so you're not allowed to harvest before the Omer. Now, there are different gersos over here. Rabbeinu Gershom, Rashi, and Tosfos have the gersa the other way around, that you're not allowed to eat them as chodosh before, the Omer, and you're not allowed to harvest them before Pesach. So the idea is, in other words, you can't harvest them before Pesach. Listen, you anyway can't harvest on Yom Tov itself, because Yom Tov, that's one of the malachas, that's also on Yom Tov, and Motzei Yom Tov already, they do the, they start harvesting the Korban Omer, so therefore, at that point, you could harvest your own. So that would be a reason to flip around the girsa. In fact, the Tosfos Yom Tov points out the Gersa as we have it in front of us could mislead a person. A person could think that it means asurim b'chodosh from lifnei Pesach. A person could mistakenly think that it means as soon as Pesach comes, you're allowed to eat the chodosh, and you're not. You have to wait until the Omer is brought, or until the 16th or 17th of Nisan, as we learned before. With that said, though, the Rambam has the Gersa as we have it, and the Rashash explains that the idea is this whole issue of harvesting before the Omer might apply only when there is an Omer to be brought. So like the issue of Chodosh applies regardless whether there's an Omer or not. And we talked about a couple of blocks ago, when does it expire? Does it expire at the beginning of the 16th or the 17th or only at the end of the day? The halacha is that it expires at the end of the day, the end of the 16th in Eretz Yisrael, the end of the 17th outside Eretz Yisrael. In any case, though, the Rashash argues, and then many other Achronim agree as well, that the issue of harvesting applies only when there is an Omer. But nowadays, for example, when there's no Omer, then there would in fact be, when the Mishnah is saying, it would mean before there's an actual Omer to be brought. So most Zachronim do hold that way, although the Shagas Aryan notably disagrees with that and says, in fact that the issue of harvesting does apply nowadays, at least in Eretz Yisrael. Fine, in Chutz Laaretz maybe not because look, in Chutz Laaretz you can't bring the Omer from Chutz Laaretz anyway, as we're going to learn later on in our Masechta. But different Achronim that talk about that. In fact the Shagas Aryeh argues that that it would mean that in fact you would actually be also to harvest anywhere before the 16th of Nisan. All right. In any case, so you have the different Gersoros in our Mishnah then, at what point? But basically, in other words, the idea is until the Omer is brought, you can't eat them. They're Chodosh, and until a certain point, until the Omer is harvested, you're not allowed to harvest such grains, any of these five. Again, keep in mind, I mean, of course, the Omer is brought specifically from barley, but nevertheless, it'll still apply to these other four grains as well. Continues the Mishnah. Any of these species, if they took root before the Omer, for Omer Matiran, then the Omer, once it's brought, or once the 16th of Nisan comes, or once the 16th of Nisan begins or ends, according to the different opinions, then Ha'omer Matiran, then the Omer makes them mutter to eat. V'imlav, if they didn't take root before the Omer, Asuran, Shiyava Ha'omer Amba, then they'll be also until the next year's Omer is brought. How long it takes for them to take root, there also you have a Machlokas. Yeah, machlokas aposkim, how long that takes. In various places, the Gemara has machlokas about how long it takes trees to take root, and the halacha is that it takes 2 weeks. So does that apply to grain as well, or does grain maybe take less time? And there are poskim who learn that when it comes to grain, which is what we're talking about over here, then maybe you only need 3 days. That's the generally accepted halacha, that as long as it's most of the poskim learn that way and say that it means that you only need 3 days. Okay, so we'll talk about that more in the Gemara Be'ez Hashem. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. Tana, we learn in a Braisa, Kusmin min chitin. Kusmin, we have the five types that are mentioned in our Mishnah. So kusmin, the third one mentioned in our, so chita, so the Gemara doesn't need to define. We know what those are, wheat and barley. Kusmin, the Gemara says, first of all, min chitin. It's considered a subspecies of wheat, which we'll talk about in a minute, what the naftamina that is. Shibolus shul, a shifun min sa'odim. The other two that I mentioned in the mission, shibolus shul and shifun, are subtypes of barley. So here, Rashi explains, it means as far as chala. Now, like this, you have, our Mishnah had said, that all of them combine together, but there's a difference between whether you made a batch of dough mixed of various kinds of grain versus you made different batches, let's say one of wheat and one of barley and so forth, and then they touched one another, then before you bake them, they touched one another, and they're what's called in halacha noshech, they bite from one another, meaning that if you pull them apart, then each one is going to get a little bit of the other stuck to it. So now there's a difference. When it comes to if you blend various types of flour together to make dough, then all five of them are going to combine to make a shiur challah. But if you have separate batches of dough and they're connected only afterwards, after you made each batch and before they're baked and they become connected in that way of noshech, then it's going to depend which one. Wheat, for example, won't combine with barley. So now the Braisa tells us that kusmin is considered a subspecies of wheat, such that if you have a batch of wheat dough and a batch of kusmin dough, then and they touch one another, they touch each other and they're noshech and one of them bites from the other, then they will combine. Tosfos also discusses this in some detail over here. But again, wheat and barley wouldn't, and the same thing. When we continue, that shibolus shul and shifun are min sa'odin, same thing. It means any of those three can combine. But for example, a batch of wheat dough wouldn't combine with a batch of barley dough, nor would, for example, a batch of wheat dough combine with shibolus shul or shifun. So again, there's a difference, but that's talking about when it's separate batches versus when they're all blended together in one dough. So the Gemara says, let's define them. Kusmin, what is the plant called? Kusmin, in Aramaic it's called guba. Rashi translates it as spelt. Shifon is what's called in Aramaic dishra. Rashi defines that as why. And Shibola Shul, Rashi uses French words for them, but you look at the French words and you can understand what they are in English. Shibola Shul is what's called in Aramaic Shiboli Tala, literally Shiboli Tala, and Shibola Shul for that matter literally means the stalks of the fox. So Rashi elsewhere explains that they sort of resemble, the way they grow, they resemble the tail of a fox. So in English it's called oats. There are some Rishonim who have different definitions of some of them, but these are the most widely accepted definitions among the poskim. So all these five are able to be used for, they're all chayv and chala, all of them you say mizonis or hamotzian, all of them you have, and they have the various other dinim that are mentioned in our Mishnah. in particular, this is Negea, as far as people, in general, we have wheat matzah, but you have some people who can't have wheat for one reason or another, because of allergies or celiac or whatever, and they have to have various other grains. So the post can discuss that, in that case, given that in the list over here, you have oats and you have spelt. So you do have nowadays, they have spelt matzah and oat matzah. So again, there are some who question that and say that maybe the definitions of the grains that are mentioned over here is different than the way it actually defines them. But the consensus of post skim is this way. They tell, for example, about one thing they brought up as far as oats. Oats don't have gluten in them, unlike the other ones, which is why they're good for people who are celiac. But the concern was, in that case, then maybe they don't become chometz either, because chometz requires gluten on the face of it. So they say that at one point, Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, when he would have oatmeal for breakfast, so he at one point, based on this question, started saying shahakal on it, until one time he met up with Reb Yosef Shalom al Yashiv, and Reb Yosef Shalom told him off for it and says, don't start changing minhagim of Jews for generations just because some researcher came up with a question of whether oats are in fact one of the Chamesh Aminim. Anyway. So the Gemara says, Hani Ein. Okay, so the implication of the Mishnah is only these five, Achayev and Chala, and the rest of the dinim that we said in the Mishnah, Oras v'doichan loy, but not Oras and Doichan. Now here also you have different opinions what Oras and Doichan are. Most Rishonim learn that Oras is rice, so the words are phonetically similar, Oras rice, and Doichan would be a different species called millet. On the other hand, Rashi in Brachas defines differently. Rashi defines Oras is millet, and Doichan, Rashi defines a different thing called in English panic grass, which is a subspecies of millet. This has implications, the difference which one is Oras and which one is Doichan has implications la halacha. The Gemara in Brachas tells us that aside from the five grains, the only other grain on which you would make a mizonis, the Gemara says that there is Oras, but you say bonafoshis afterwards, but you say mizonis on it. So the Velt holds that Oras is rice, and therefore they say mizonis on various things made from rice. The Alter Rebbe points out that according to Rashi's definition, Oras is not rice, Oras would be millet. And therefore, because of the suffet, the Alter Rebbe says that better when you're going to eat rice, you should either eat it in a meal of bread, and that way the hamotzi covers everything, you should eat it in a meal of bread. Some say also, some Lubavitcher Rabbanim learn that you can also eat meal, you can also eat items of all three brachas, eat something mezonos, something hadamah, something shakol, and then eat the rice, and no matter what, you're covered by that. Different rabbanim argue whether that's what the Alter Rebbe meant as a valid solution either. In any case, all that is based on the question whether Oras is in fact rice. Anyway, the Gemara says the implication is the Mishnah listed only these five grains, so not Oras and Doichan. So Menahani Mili, how do we know that? Omer Shlokish Asya Lechem Lechem Mimatzah. Because we learn it, Zeta Shava, on the word lechem from matzah. Ksiv hocha v'hoya ba'achochem milechem ha'aretz. The Pasuk says that he takes challah when you eat from the bread of the land of Eretz Yisrael. V'chotiv alzim lechem oni. Matzah is described as lechem oni. So therefore, so we learn it, Zeta Shava, that what's considered bread as far as matzah is also considered bread as far as challah. And since matzah can only be made from these five, then, and not Oras and Doichan, then therefore challah is taken from only those as well. Well, the Gemara says v'hosam gufa menolon. Well, by matzah itself, how do we know that it means that for those five? So the answer is omer shlokish v'chein tonet v'ei Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shlokish says, and so also it was taught in a brisa. in the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, v'chein tonet v'ed Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and so also in Braisa from the yeshiva of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, omar krom, because the pasuk says, lois soichal olav chometz, don't eat chometz together with the korban Pesach, shivas yomim soichal olav matzis lechem oini, for 7 days you should eat together with it matzis, the bread of poverty. So we see that there's a hekesh between chometz and matzah. So from this we learn, dvorim aboyim ledei chimutz, only grains that are capable of becoming chometz, where dough of them is capable of becoming chometz, odom yotze behen yidei chevosid b'Pesach. With those are what a person will be yotze, his obligation on Pesach of eating matzah. Yotzu evu, as opposed to these, odos and doichan, she'en boyim ledei chimutz, they don't become chometz, elu ledei silchan, they spoil. So, in other words, again, because they need gluten, they need various enzymes in them, which rice and millet and panic and whatever these kinds of things, everything outside of the five grains, don't have the necessary enzymes to become chometz. Chometz is basically, you have yeasts operate on they eat the sugars and the starches in the dough, and they produce alcohol and carbon dioxide, and that causes the bread to puff up. But that requires, in order for it to work that way, in order for it to make a stretchy, puffed up bread, it requires certain enzymes which odors and doshan don't have. So therefore you can't make matzah from them. Therefore they can't become chametz, and therefore they're not chayiv and challah either. As far as that, we don't eat them on Pesach nowadays. But that's a minhag from the time of the Goyim or the early Rishonim, the minhag of Kitnius. That's more. Because they resemble grain, they resemble the five grains, and therefore there's a concern people might mix them up, or even that some actual grain might be mixed up with them. As far as that concern, by the way, that they grow up, that maybe oats don't have gluten, they found that actually they do have a tiny bit of gluten in them, not enough, I guess, to trigger people who are allergic to it, but at least enough that it can become chometz, and they've actually done experiments and demonstrated that they can make chometz out of oat flour, and therefore it is, after all, kosher for matzah. The Mishnah said, with Starf and Zemzeh, we said all five of these types combine with one another. Again, as Rashi and Tosfos have pointed out, that means, we're going to see in the Gemara a number of ways in which they combine together, but one thing is, as far as Rashi and Tosfos have pointed out, as far as Challah, it means that if you have one batch of dough that contains multiple ones of these, then we don't care which, as long as it's among these five, then it'll all count towards a Shiur Challah. Again, not if you have separate batches which touch one another, then you have what we said before, that's only wheat together with spelt, with kusmin, and barley together with shibboleth, shul, and shifrin, rye, and oats. Tosfos actually discusses that when the Gemara had said before that kusmin is min chitin, Tosfos explains, based on some other Gemaras, it may not mean that it's exclusively part of chitin, it may mean that it belongs together with sa'urim as well. In other words, that kusmin would be kind of a hybrid, it's not really a hybrid, but it could be something like in between, where it will combine together with either wheat or barley, as opposed to shibboleth, shul, and shifrin will combine together only with barley, as far as that case, when you have separate batches. Okay. So the Gemara says, Tana, we learn in a braisa, dvor, the grain itself, our kmokim, flour, vabitsekas, and dough, mitzdarkin, zemzeh, all combined together with one another. So the Gemara says, Ramay Hilsa, as far as what halacha are we talking about? You can't say, for example, as far as challah, because let's say, for example, challah doesn't apply while it's still in the form of grain or in the form of flour, it has to be made into a dough. So what do we mean that they combine together? So, Omer of Kahana le'inin chodesh. It means as far as eating chodesh, if a person were to eat a kezias of some wheat grains and some barley grains and some spelt grains and so forth, then he would be getting malchus. Rav Yosef Omer le'inin chometz for Pesach. Rav Yosef says as far as chometz on Pesach. Same idea. In other words, now grains can become chometz as well. After all, if you soak them in water, Then they absorb water and eventually they'll become chametz. So now you can have a person took a few grains of wheat that had become chametz and a few grains of barley that had become chametz and so forth and eats them and they form a kezias and he's getting malchus for that. Rapapa Omar, le'inin ma'aseh sheni. Rapapa says, as far as eating ma'aseh sheni outside Yerushalayim, di'yochel le'chutz l'choyma, if he eats this combination of a kezias made up of the different grains outside the walls of Yerushalayim, lucky, then he's going to get malchus. Now, these Amoraim are not disagreeing with one another. They're just each one is giving a different scenario where it's relevant to talk about, combining together a kezias out of different kinds of grain. Rava Amalin in Tumas Uchlin. Rava says that it's as far as the din of Tumas Uchlin that when you combine them together, now it's Machlokas Rishonim, we talked about earlier in the Masechta, can food become Tomei less than a Kabeitza? Rashi and Tosfos hold no, that you need a Kabeitza at least for it to become Tomei. The Rambam holds that it could, that any even the smallest amount of food can become Tomei. But as far as being the Tamei, other food, everybody agrees that you need a Kabeitza for that. So Rava says, as far as Tumas Eichlin, it's going to be relevant to talk about whether it combines together. For Hok Hamash Malon, in which case Rava says, then the Braisa, the Braisa wants you to know, the Chiddush of it is, the Tavuo Kmochen Dumya Debetzetus, that the din of grain, of unprocessed grain, and a flour, in this sense, is exactly like that of dough. Now, when it comes to dough, it's food all by itself without any psoilus, because after all, you sift the grain. You sift the grain before you make the dough out of it, so therefore it's clean. There shouldn't be anything mixed into it. The same thing, hochanami, af hochanami uchla ba'ene. The same way, when it comes to grain and flour, it's also only the food itself, as opposed to if you have shells or bran or whatever mixed in, then those are not considered food, says Rava, and therefore they wouldn't count towards the kibetza for Tumas Eichlin. It's actually the Karen Oda does discuss that each one of them is not so much that they're arguing, but each one is explaining a case where there's a particular chiddush. So the Chiddush of Kahana is talking about chodesh, that if a person were to eat a kazayis of unprocessed grain and another kazayis of flour and another kazayis of dough, he would get malchus for each one. And then Rabbi Yosef says, as far as chametz for Pesach, that even though you could argue that grain that became chametz doesn't taste like flour and doesn't taste like dough, nevertheless they combine together. So what's the chiddush by Ma'aseh Sheni? And then what's the chiddush by Ma'aseh Sheni? He says, I'm not clear what the chiddush of a papa is. So Rava is saying that the shells or the shells or husks or other things of the grain would not combine together towards the kazais. And the Gemara says, "V'ha Tanya," and indeed we learn like that in the Braisa. Chita ben klufa ben sheina klufa. When it comes to wheat, whether it's peeled or not, whether it's just the grain by itself or whether it's got the shells and the husks on it, mistarefes, it combines together with other grains, with other food to make up a kazayis. And the reason is because when it comes to wheat, the shell of it, the peel of it, is very, very thin, and therefore people will in fact eat it. You even have whole wheat bread, after all, includes that. Sa'ura, but when it comes to barley, klufa, mitzarefes, only if it's peeled does it combine together. She'ena klufa, ena mitzarefes, but if it's not peeled, then it doesn't combine. Because the peel, the shell of barley seeds is not royal Michael Adam. In fact, Rashi says not only the grain wouldn't even count either, because the grain is wrapped up inside the shell. So it wasn't any, is that so? For Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, we learn a braisa from the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, when the Pasuk says, the Pasuk talks about Tumas Eichlin, and it describes how, for example, if a dead sheretz falls, al kol zera zerua asher yizareya, on any seed of any type of crop, that will be planted. So therefore we learn from that, when it's that will be planted, means that seeds are makabel tuma when they're in the normal state where people take them to plant. Wheat grains in their shells, in their husks, so, and barley in its husks, and lentils in their husks. So we see that even though those are considered edible to the extent of Tumas Eichlin. So what are you telling me? Rava, that it doesn't combine together? Now Tosfos points out an interesting thing. The Gemara tells us in Ksubos one of the interesting ideas about Tchias HaMeisim is when people come alive by Tchias HaMeisim, are they going to come alive with their clothing or not? So the Gemara makes a Kal V'Chomer over there. You plant a wheat seed naked without any husks, and it comes out of the ground wrapped in several layers of husks. So Alach Kal V'Chomer, people who are buried with their clothing normally will come out by Tchias HaMeisim with the clothing. So the question is, you were saying that you do plant it with the husks on. So Tosfos says, What it means is the fact is you could plant it either way. Fine, many you do often plant it with the husk, as our Gemara is saying over here. But the point is, even if you don't, even if you do plant a wheat seed naked without the husk, it will, when a stalk of grain grows from that seed, it will in fact have many husks. So therefore, the Kavachomer is still valid. Anyway, the point is, though, that here we're saying that Rabbi Shmuel is saying that the husks do count because that's the normal way you plant them, and therefore they are matama tumas eichlin, whereas here Rava is saying that not. The answer is lo kasha, hobel lachas, hobel yevashis. Depends whether the husks are moist or dry. It actually explains, if they're moist, they're considered a shomer. They help protect the grain, and we're going to learn in Masechta Chol in a few months, Bez Hashem, that a shomer, something that protects food, is also considered part of the food and counts towards the kezias and kebetza, for Tumas Erchlin. As opposed to, if the husk is dry, then it's not protecting the fruit, then it's not protecting the grain, and therefore, because anyway, it's gonna crumble and fall off, so it's not considered a shomer. That's Rashi's first explanation. Then Rashi says a second explanation. When they're moist, you're able to eat them because they're still soft. So that would be another way of explaining the difference. Okay. Rashi has a question on one of those explanations. The Rambam learns the other way around. The Rambam learns when they're dry, they combine because people usually take them out to plant when the husk is dry, but when the husk is moist, then it doesn't combine. Okay, in any case, Rava is not contradicting Tanan Veda Bishmal because they're talking about two different scenarios. Okay. The Mishnah had said Vasurin the Chodesh Malifna Pesach, that you're not allowed to eat any of these grains as Chodesh before Pesach, or again Malifna Omer, as we said before, the different Gyusaris. The Bach also brings the different Gyusaris over here, based on what we talked about before, about to not be misleading and to clarify does it apply, do these dinim apply when there's no Omer or not. Anyway, the Gemara says Menohani Mili, where do we know this from? Amar Shlokish Asir Lechem Lechem Mimatzah. Again, we have the same Zera Shava on the word Lechem from Matzah, where by Chodesh it also says, you know, I'll eat Lechem. So therefore we learn that it means only what's defined as Lechem, which we said was the five grains. That's Rashi. So this is Rashi's explanation. Tosfos explains that in that case, that the Gemara should have started by pointing out only these, not odors and doichan, and then ask Menani Mili. Rather, Tosfa says, no, on the contrary, the question is, given that you can bring the omer only from barley, maybe only barley should be also to eat before the omer, maybe the other four types should be mutzer, and therefore you have the Gzeira Shavat to say that, no, anything that can be used for matzah is also as chodesh before the omer. Okay. So the Mishnah said velitzer melifnei oimer, you're not allowed to velitzer lifnei oimer, you're not allowed to harvest it before the oimer. Again, the different gears over here that you can't harvest it before Pesach. So menahani mili, again we said that when there's no oimer you are allowed to harvest it. The Shagasawiya holds no, and you have the discussion about that. So the Gemara says menahani mili, how do we know that you're not allowed to harvest any of these five before the oimer? Amar Rabbi Yechon, ask your reishis mechala, because we learn Gzeira Shava on the word reishis from chala. The omer is reishis tzirchem, chala is reishis aritzisechem. So just like chala applies only to the five grains, the same way the issue of harvesting applies only to the five grains. Well, when we say kodim, when we say lifnei omer, before what part of the omer? My kodim la omer. What do we mean by before? What do we mean before the omer? When we say that you're not allowed to eat them before the omer. Rabbi Yona Omer Kodim Ktsiras Omer. Rabbi Yona says it means before the omer is harvested. So he learns that once the omer is harvested, then Rashi explains that Rabbi Yona would say you're allowed to right away eat Chodesh as soon as it gets light on the 16th of Nisan, because he holds like the opinion that we learned the other day, that when there's no omer, you're allowed to eat Chodesh immediately in the morning. Rabbi Yosi bar Zavda Omer Kodim Havas Omer. Rabbi Yosi bar Zavda means it means before the Omer is offered. And before the Omer is offered, meaning in other words you'd have to wait until later in the day, and it would mean Chidushim Amichasim LaRashba points out means it would mean before the last moment at which you could bring the Omer. If there was a Beis Hamikdash, usually they would bring the Omer in the morning, as we learned before. But the fact is, it could conceivably happen that it's delayed because as we talked about the other day in Rosh Hashanah and in Sukkah, it talks about that the Beis Hamikdash might be built on the night going into the 16th of Nisan or whatever, and then they'll bring the Korban Omer that same day, but they and they bring it very late in the day, so that four coins of Yosef Azavda would follow the opinions that said before that we would have to wait until the end of the 16th, and of course, it's because it's fake of the Yema, we'd have to wait until the end of the 17th. Tosfos though says that then why mention Kodun Ksira Sa'oma according to Rabbi Yonah? It's when Heir Mizrach, we learned the other day. So Tosfos has that and a bunch of questions on Rashi, and therefore they end up explaining that they end up talking according to the other Girsa that we talked about before, that's talking about that you're not allowed to harvest them before Pesach. So Rabbi Yonah would say that means you're not allowed to harvest them until the Omer is harvested. So in other words, you know, but once comes the 16th of Nisan, the night, then you're the first night of Chol HaMoed, then already you'd be allowed to harvest, whereas Rabbi Yosef Bar Zavda would be saying you have to wait till the next morning. Well, the Gemara says, Tznan, we learn in our Mishnah, Asurim b'chodesh melifnei Pesach, we said you're not allowed to eat them as chodesh before Pesach, v'litzo lifnei Omer, you're not allowed to harvest them before the Omer. So it mentions two different things. So Bishlam Lamanda Omar Kodima Vasa Omer. So according to Yosef Bar Zavda, who says that you can't do it before the Omer is brought, meaning in other words, again, if we're talking about eating it according to Rashi, or if we're talking about harvesting before the Omer, Hainu, like Ka'ar of Lahu, but Tony Lahu, that would explain why the Mishnah is not combining it together. Why doesn't it say Vasurim Bachodash Umalikta Milifne HaPesach Umalifne Omer? Because according to him, there are two different things. One of them you're not allowed to do until the Omer, and one of them you're not allowed to do until the Omer is actually brought, and the other one you're allowed to do already the night, So you see, he would say that as far as harvesting, he would say that you can harvest it until the Omer, and you can harvest it once they harvest the Omer, but you can only eat from it the next morning. So then, according to him, that's why it would mention them as two separate things. But according to the Biona, that both things are allowed as soon as the Omer is harvested. So why does the Mishnah combine them together? So that wording of the Mishnah is a question on Rabbi Yonah. Granted, Tosfos says there's a slight difference because it would be from Alois HaShachar until a slight difference between. Usually the harvesting is done by night. But the fact is, it could happen that it's harvested as late as Alois HaShachar, and therefore it comes out. Therefore, that the moment when you're allowed to harvest and the moment when you're allowed to eat could actually be the same thing. But again, that's one of Tosfos' questions on Rashi, is that seems to be a bit of a dirt cut. So the Gemara says, Eli Itmar Sefer Itmar. So you're right. If the Machorkas of Rabbi Yosef Bar Zavda and Rabbi Yonah was said, then it was said on the Sefer of our Mishnah. Namely, when the Mishnah says, so not as far as the Reisha, when it talks about what's also before Pesach and before the Omer, you're right. They would both agree that as far as the harvesting, you can't do it before the Omer is harvested, and as far as the eating, and then you have the Machorkas Tanoim that we had the other day between the Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, whether in fact you should harvest, but whether in fact you can harvest before the Omer is brought. Because you might eat from it or not, but you can't eat from it until the Omer is brought, or until the beginning or the end of the 16th, according to the different opinions. But rather, the machlokas between them is as follows. When the Mishnah continues, im hishvishu kodim la'omer, we said that if they took root before the Omer, ha'omer matiran, then the Omer is matur them. So now, my kodim la'omer. Now the question would be, what we mean before the Omer? Rabbi Yonah omer, kodim havas la'omer. Rabbi Yonah would say that it means as long as they took root before the Omer was actually brought. So even they hadn't yet taken root the night before when they harvested the Omer, but nevertheless it's good enough for it to be mutter, as and no longer be chadash, as long as it took root by the morning when they actually brought the Omer. Rabbi Yosef Bar Zavda Omer, couldn't consider the Omer. Rabbi Yosef Bar Zavda then would say that it means only if it took root before the Omer was harvested, which is the night before. Shutamukhabetis actually has the girsa with the two opinions the other way around. But in any case, so that would be the machlokas then. An interesting point that Achronim bring up, Rabbi Akiva Eger brings up, is that if we talk about how long it takes for it to take root, but we usually say mikta sayen tukule, we often say that part of a day is considered like the whole day. It's actually the Turei Evan, the Shagas Arya, brings up this question first, that the opinion that says that it takes 3 days for it to take root, that's Rabbi Yehuda, also holds Mitzaseyem Gekoloi. So therefore, so what's the difference? Whether it took root by the night of the 16th, so if we consider you need 3 days, in other words, so as long as you planted Erev Pesach, you have 14, 15, 16 Nisin, it doesn't matter when you only have part of a day, so therefore, so,
So there wouldn't be any nafkamina whether it happened before, whether we would consider lahalacha that it took root already by the night, and we wouldn't care about whether in fact it does during the day. So the Minchas Chinuch explains that here we don't say mitzaseyim kakolai. It would be that it needs 72, that it needs full 72 hours. Then the Minchas Chinuch also says that the Gemara does agree here mitzaseyim kakolai. But later on we're going to learn in the Perek that we're going to learn tomorrow Be'ez Hashem that if the barley for the Omer was harvested by day, then b'di'eved the Mishnah is going to say mitzaseyim kosher. That if it was harvested by day, it is kosher b'di'eved. So the Minchas Chinuch learns that it means not only the day of the 16th, it could even be harvested before the 16th. We're even going to have at the end of our parak, we're going to have an opinion that's not Dercha Shabbos, which means that if the 16th comes out on Shabbos, necessarily you would have to do it the day before. So therefore there would be a big nafkamina in days. So the Sfasemes talks about and says that no, what the vort is, in other words, you don't know. It's going to take root sometime during the 3 days, but you don't know exactly when. If you have a way of knowing that it took root within the 3 days, then fine, it took root. But let's say you have some way of knowing. You have an expert who can tell you nowadays. I don't know. You do an X-ray or an MRI or something, and you find that it did in fact take root between when the Omer was harvested on the night of the 16th of Nisan and by day when the Omer is brought. Would it be considered? Would it be mutter by the Omer or not? That's how the Sfas Emes explains the argument in the Gemara over here. The Rashash also points out that the question is not so much the question is just whether you can harvest it or not. As far as eating, he learns that it would be that everybody would agree that it's mutter, but on the other hand, Revolva Brisker says that no, fakir, the machlokas is primarily as far as eating it. So if you're allowed to eat it, then you're allowed to harvest it as well, because the harvesting and the eating, according to him, go together. So because those you have those different ways of explaining the machlokas and the uncertainty in the Gemara.